welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, sitcoms, we'll laugh along with our Miss Brooks a little later in the hour, but right now it's Harold Perry on The Harold Perry Show. Previous to this series, he was known as the Great Gildersleeve on NBC and had professed to be bored of the character, so he pitched a show to the Columbia Broadcasting System, who picked it up for just one seemingly short season. As it turned out, there were too many similarities to the Gildersleeve program, which loyal fans still tuned in for, with new actor in the role Willard Waterman. But it wasn't for lack of good comedy, which we'll hear next in this episode, first broadcast on CBS on January 10th, 1951.
Saturday, it's the exciting new Plymouth. Right now, it's the Harold Perry Show. And now, Harold Perry as Honest Harold the Homemaker. Well, let's look in on the little town of Melrose Springs, home of that popular radio entertainer, Honest Harold the Homemaker. This is Harold's week to broadcast the 6 a.m. weather reports, and for the second morning in a row, he has overslept. It is now 9 a.m., and we find our worried weather reporter plodding along on his way to the radio station.
What a horrible day. Looks like it was up all night. Wonder what my dear boss, Stanley Peabody, will say. Yesterday, he threatened to fire me if I missed broadcasting the weather again. Who listens to weather reports at 6 o'clock in the morning? Just the chickens. They don't need the radio to tell them it's cold. I'd know enough to go in the coop if I had snow on my tail feathers.
Good morning, radio station KJP.
Good morning, Glory.
Oh, good morning, Harold. Mr. Peabody wants to see you in his office right away.
Maybe he's going to fire me. And Gloria, how is Stanley this morning? Is he in a good mood?
Well, when I saw him, he looked sour.
Sour?
Yes, he was drinking his yogurt.
Goodness.
Well, that was a little joke.
It certainly was. See you later, Gloria, I hope. I'm not afraid of Stanley. Just let him try to fire me. I'll show that prissy pants. I'll walk right in his office, look him right square in the eye, and I'll say, look here, you old... Oh, hello, Stanley.
No. It's you, Hemp.
Yeah, it's me.
Well, don't just stand there. Come in.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Well, Hemp, you missed the weather reports this morning. Overslept again, didn't you?
Well, yes. You see, Stanley, I bought a new alarm clock, and it plays chimes. When I heard it this morning, I thought it was Sunday, so I went back to sleep.
Hemp, can't you think of a better excuse than that?
Well, how do you like this one? The reason I was late...
Never mind. Hemp, I've come to a decision about you.
Oh, here it comes.
I've been thinking it over for a long time.
Wonder what time the employment office opens.
Hemp, I'm leaving town in about an hour. I'll be back tomorrow morning. But while I'm gone, I'll have to put you in charge of the station.
Ha?
Hemp, close your mouth.
Yes, sir. Well, so I'm going to be in charge of the station.
Yes, but only because there's no one else available. That's why I have to pick a bungler like you.
Oof, I hate him. Well, don't you worry, Stanley. I'll make things hum. First, I'll go down and talk to my sponsor, Mr. Turner, at the mattress factory. I'll sell him another 15 minutes.
Don't you dare talk to Mr. Turner. All I want you to do is sit here in my office and answer the phone. Yeah. And remember, don't try to fill my shoes. There's only one Stanley Peabody.
Yeah, that's one too many.
What's that, Hemp?
Eh? I said, say hello to your Aunt Jenny. Oh. Have a nice trip, Stanley. Goodbye. Gee, I just can't believe it. I'm in charge of the whole radio station, all 250 watts. I look like a real executive when I walk in. Fresh shaved carnation, this blue suit. Kind of shiny in the back, but I'll be sitting down most of the time. Hey, I think I'll drop into Marshall's office and see Pete, impress him with my new job. Well, hello, Pete, my good man.
Oh, hello, Harry.
Pete, do you notice anything different about me?
How's that?
Take a good look at me.
You got shaving soap in your ear, boy.
No, Pete, I'm all dressed up. I'm going to be in charge of the radio station today. I'm a big executive.
Oh, I see. You're one of them typhoons. Yes.
I am not a typhoon. That's a big win.
That's right. I'm only kidding, boy. Well, hello, Doc.
Hello, Pete.
Well, hello, you old horse doctor.
Well, hello, crooner.
Now, Doc, Harold ain't just a crooner now. He's manager of the radio station today.
Oh, is that so, Harold?
Yeah, that's right, Doc. I'm in complete charge down there. Mighty big responsibility, but I guess I can handle it.
Complete charge, eh?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose you could even hire entertainers if you wanted to, huh?
Oh, certainly.
I know a wonderful act for you, Harold.
Oh, who's that?
Me and Pete.
What?
Yeah, we're a singing duo.
Yeah, boy. We call ourselves the Three Andrews Sisters minus one.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Come on, Maxie.
Okay, Laverne.
I was waltzing with my darling.
Fellas.
To the
Oh, this old friend is leaving. Goodbye. This is certainly going to be a busy day. Well, here's Stanley's office. What am I knocking for? It's my office now. Well, might as well get behind the desk. Try Stanley's chair for size. Chair's very comfortable. It spins around, too. Yeah, this is fun. Oop, I'm getting chair sick. Wonder where Stanley keeps his cigars. Probably in this drawer here. Oh, yeah, here's the little box. Just open the lid, reach in. Oop, what's his note? Hemp, keep your sticky fingers out of my cigar. What a sneaky thing to do. Who's that? Come in.
Hello, Haroldy Waroldy.
Well, hello, Theodora.
Well, I hear you're a big executive today.
Oh, yeah, I've been execing all over the place. Theodora, how'd you like to be my secretary?
Well, I don't know, Harold. I can't type very fast.
Oh, that's all right. My speed's about 10 kisses a minute.
Oh, Harold.
How about taking a little dictation right now, huh?
My, you look like a great big old lion behind that desk.
I do.
It's too bad you're not station manager all the time.
Yeah, it certainly is. That Peabody, he runs his station like a yogurt factory.
I bet you could run it much better, Curly Lashes.
And I could, too. Take my program, for instance. It's an hour long and only 15 minutes of it is sponsored by Turner's Mattress Factory. I bet I could sell Mr. Turner the whole hour, but Peabody won't let me go near him.
Why, Harold, you're not afraid of Stanley Peabody, are you?
Well,
I thought you were a lion. You're the king of the jungle.
I am? Say, you're right, Theodora. Why should I be afraid of Stanley? I'm going down and sell Turner right now. Theodora.
Harold, you're so masterful.
Theodora, come here and sit on my knee.
Yes, sir.
Now kiss me.
Yes, sir. How did my big executive like that?
You know, Theodora, I was made for this job. Yeah. Yeah, Theodora's right. I'll show Peabody how to handle this. It must be Mr. Turner's office at the end of the hall. There's a door on it. He'd be pretty thrilled to see me. After all, I'm the star of his radio program.
Come in.
Mr. Turner, I'm Honest Harold, the homemaker.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Homemaker?
Yeah. No. My name is Hemp. You must know me. You sponsor part of my radio program.
Radio program?
Yeah, you've been sponsoring me for 5 years.
Oh, I do have a hazy recollection of that.
Wow. He's hazy, all right. How do you like my program?
Well, I haven't listened to radio for a long time.
What?
since my crystal set broke down.
Oh, brother.
My favorite radio orchestra is the A&P Gypsies.
Yeah.
They're going places.
They've already gone.
I haven't heard the street singer lately. What happened to him?
I guess he's working another street.
Too bad.
Yeah, Mr. Turner, I was just wondering if you wouldn't like to sponsor the entire hour of my program.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Hemp. What kind of a program is it?
Oh, it's really very good. I usually start it off with a funny joke.
A joke?
Oh, yeah, like this one. Here's a funny one. Must have been wonderful back in the gay 90s. Those were the horse and buggy days. Grandma drove the horse, and Grandpa drove her buggy.
What else do you do?
Yeah. Well, then I sing a little.
Oh, I'm very glad you came in.
Oh, that's all right. Glad to do it. Are you going to take the whole hour?
No, I think I'll give you back your 15 minutes.
Oh, Mr. Turner, you're going to cancel my program?
I'm sorry, Mr. Hemp, but I'm afraid as far as radio is concerned, I'm through.
So am I. Can I borrow one of your mattresses? I wonder where the A&P gypsies are camping tonight.
It's afternoon now, and we find our unhappy executive at home talking to his mother.
I'm through at the radio station, Mother. I might as well turn in my stopwatch.
Now, son, if you are fired, we'll get along. Why, if necessary, I'll get a job.
Yep.
I understand there's an opening at the laundromat.
Yep. Please. Mother, I will support our little family.
Anyhow, Harold, you haven't been fired at the radio station yet. Maybe you can think up another program that Mr. Turner would like.
No, Mother, it wouldn't work. I'm licked.
Harold, a man isn't out until they dragged him to his corner.
Mother, you've been sneaking out to the prize fights?
No, but I saw one in a movie the other night. One of the fighters reminded me of you.
Oh?
He thought he was beaten, too. For 9 rounds, he took an awful licking.
Mm-hmm.
A right to the chin. A left to the nose.
Watch it, Mother.
And then a smash to the stomach.
Zoink. Wish the bell would ring.
But in the 10th round, he came back.
Uh-huh.
He lifted an uppercut from the floor and knocked his opponent out for a count of 15.
Yep. Mother, that's 10.
Oh, yes. Now remember, Harold, it's never too late to come back.
Maybe you're right, Mother. I will get another program for Turner.
That's the spirit, son. And I'll be in your corner.
Okay, Mother. I'll go out and win this fight. You bring the smelling salts. What kind of a program would Turner like? Better get an idea pretty soon. I'm wearing out the floor in this office. Let's see. Maybe a musical show would be good to advertise his mattress factory. We could call it Holiday for Springs. No, I guess not. Let me see. Who's that? Come in.
Howdy, boy.
Pete.
Hello, Ham.
Double trouble. What are you two fellas doing down here?
Came down to save your job, boy.
What?
Your mother told us she was looking for a new radio program. We got just the thing for you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a mystery program.
A mystery program?
Yep. And it's real scary.
Oh.
Boom!
Look, this is all very nice of you guys, but I'm busy.
We wrote it ourselves, Harold.
But folks...
Now, the first scene is an old English castle. Pete plays the part of an English lord. Kind of a high mucky muck.
High mucky muck.
Hi, Harold. I'm supposed to be Lord Beaverbottom. Ain't that a doozy?
Certainly is.
And I play a sort of Jekyll and Hyde. Hyde at night.
Yeah. Gotta hide in the daytime, too. Now, look, folks.
And that show opens on a stormy night. Lord Beaverbottom is sitting in his castle. Well, go on, Pete.
Oh, yes. By Jove, it is a dark and stormy night, by Jove.
What do you mean, Lord?
By Jove, what was that? A noise, by Jove.
I declare I sound like Basil Rathbone.
That's what you think.
Then I climb in the window. I'm crazy, Harold.
Now, listen to me, both of you. I'm sorry, but your mystery program idea isn't what I'm looking for, fellas.
Oh, well, we got another idea.
What?
A musical act. It features Arthur, my goat.
What?
Yeah, he's right outside. Come on in, Arthur.
Doc!
Come on. That's it, Randy. And I'll say hello to Harold, Arthur.
Doc, will you get that goat out of here?
Oh, Harold, now you've gone and hurt his feelings. Oh, he didn't mean it, Arthur, boy. He didn't mean it.
Ain't they cute together?
Yeah. I'd better open a window.
Now you listen to this, Harold. The three of us are going to sing The Thing.
The Thing? Oh, no.
Okay, boys. While I was walking down the beach one bright and sunny day,
I saw
a great big wooden box floating in the bay.
Oops.
I pulled it in and opened it up, and much to my surprise, I discovered it right before my eyes. I discovered it right before my eyes.
I wish I was in The Thing with the box. Getting late. Almost time to go home. Still haven't got an idea. Let me see. What do they put in mattresses? Tufts. Say, maybe I could get Sunny Tufts. Oh, no. Stanley will be back in the morning and I'll be looking for a new job.
Oh, Harold.
Yes, Gloria.
Oh, Mr. Peabody's girlfriend is here.
What? Miss Abigail Turner?
Yeah, she wants to know when Mr. Peabody's coming back. You want to talk to her?
I certainly do not, Gloria. I got stuck with her and Stanley Peabody New Year's Eve in the Moose Room. All she did all night was sing, "Well, the music goes round and round." Brother, what a voice. Tell her I'm out.
Oh, yes, sir. Well, she can't stay anyhow. She's on her way to see her uncle, Mr. Turner, at the mattress factory.
Yeah, well, you just tell her to... Did you say Mr. Turner is her uncle, Gloria?
Yes, sir.
Well... Gloria, I think I've got a great idea. Wonder how Miss Turner would like to sing on the radio.
But, Harold, you just said she had a terrible voice.
Yeah, but you just said Miss Turner was her uncle.
Oh!
My goodness, she got it. Show her in, will you, Gloria?
Yes, sir.
Well, I can just talk her into this. I'm sure Mr. Turner wouldn't mind sponsoring his niece.
Hello there, Mr. Hem.
Abigail, I haven't seen you since we had such a wonderful time at the New Year's Eve party, remember?
The music goes round and round.
Only an uncle would sponsor a voice like that. I'd like to put you on the radio.
Me?
Yeah, I think a voice like yours should be plugged. On the air, that is.
Oh, you're just saying that.
No, I'm not. Why, with your uncle, your talent, I could build a whole program around you.
Couldn't sing on the radio. That microphone would scare me silly.
Too late for that. Abigail, I think you have great possibilities as a singer.
Oh, you think I could be a chanteuse?
I certainly do see. In fact, Abigail, we could start your program this very night, 8 o'clock. We can cancel the horseshoe matches.
Tonight? Oh, I couldn't tonight. I'm supposed to play canasta with my sister.
Canasta? Well, won't your sister let you out of it?
Well, I can ask her. Yes.
Good. You ask her, will you? Yeah, we'll make it tonight for sure. And just for the fun of it, why don't you ask your uncle, Mr. Turner, to listen in, huh? Tell him to fix his crystal set.
All right.
You better come down about 7 with your music.
It's all right. Oh, I'm going to be another Hildegard. Oh. Paris in the spring. Tra-la.
I hate myself for doing this, but I got to keep Mother out of the laundromat. Yasha, will you please quiet down the orchestra? We're almost ready to go on the air. Thank you. Oh, where is Abigail? There she is, spraying her throat.
Oop. Listen to her. Guess Mr. Turner will like her. She's his niece, and blood is thicker than Soprano's. Ooh, my goodness. Listen to that. Paris in the spring is going to sound like winter in Peoria. Well, maybe she won't sound so bad on Mr. Turner's crystal set. You'll think he's got a defective cat's whisker. About time to go.
Hello, Harold.
Howdy, boy, by Joe.
What are you two fellas doing here in the studio?
Well, we heard you were doing a program tonight. Just thought you might want to use us.
No, fellas, I've got a program all set.
Oh, shaw, by Joe.
Will you two please sit down over there and keep quiet?
Oh, come on, Pete. If Harold doesn't appreciate our talent, all right for him.
Talent. Oop. Time for the program. Abigail.
I'm coming.
I'm coming.
I feel so twittery.
Get your music ready, honey. It's almost 8 o'clock.
Oh, yes, all right. Oh, what, is this the thing I sing into?
No, that's the air conditioner, but it's a great idea. The microphone is over there.
Oh, here. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, there's a red light. Abigail, get ready. We're going on the air. Okay, hit it, Yasha. Ladies and gentlemen, in place of the horseshoe tournament usually broadcast at this time as a public service, radio station KHJP proudly presents a new program, no sponsor yet, songs by Mr. Turner's niece, I mean Abigail Turner. Her first number will be Paris in the Spring. Okay, Abigail.
Oh. Paris in the Spring. Oh, I'm so nervous.
Start it over.
Paris in the spring, tra-la, tra-la. I can't remember the next line.
Look at your music. Okay, Yasha.
Pa, 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 Paris in the spring.
Doc brought his goat in here. He's coming up here. Arthur, go away. Get off the platform, you little ham.
Paris in the spring. Arthur, let go of my music. Oh, he's eating my music.
Ooh, Arthur, cough up that music. Cough it up. Doc.
What's the matter, Harry?
Arthur just ate Paris in the spring.
He loves French food.
I can't go on without my music.
I can't go on.
Don't you worry, Harold. Pete and I will save the day.
What?
Come on, Pete.
Yeah, I'm ready, boy, by Joe.
Oop.
All right, Yasha. The thing from the coda.
Wait a minute.
I pulled it in and opened it up, and much to my surprise, oh, I discovered it right before my eyes.
Oh, I'm going into television. Oh, what a shambles the program turned out to be. Now I've lost Mr. Turner for good. I've lost my job for good, too. Just write Stanley a little farewell note and leave it here on his yogurt jar. Tell him I've gone to New York to study Dianetics. Oop. Wonder if that's the thing. Come in.
Hello, Mr. Hemp.
Oh, Mr. Turner, how do you do? I mean, goodbye.
I heard Abigail sing tonight.
You did? Well, I can explain everything. You see,
Mr. Hemp, I've decided to sponsor your program again.
Huh?
On one condition.
What's that?
That you never let my niece sing on your station again.
Yeah.
She's a nice girl, but after hearing her voice, nobody could sleep.
Huh?
And that's bad for the mattress business.
Well, of course. I guess you got a point there, all right.
And by the way, Mr. Hemp, I rather enjoy that goat.
Oh, Lord Arthur?
Yes, that goat has talent. Huh? He's got something inside.
Yeah, Abigail sheet music.
Well, you and he might sing a duet sometimes, like the Happiness Boys used to do. Remember, he used to sing Carolina in the Morning? Hit it, Hemp.
Hit it? Oh yeah, oh, sure. Nothing could be finer than to be in Carolina in the morning. Go into your dance, Turner.
Oh, right.
Nothing could be sweeter than your sweetie when you meet her in the morning. Say, this might bring back Christmas then. Oh, in the morning glory, wine around the door.
Thank you.
have just heard the Harold Perry Show, Honest Harold. The supporting players tonight included Olden Soleil, Carly Bear, Mari Olden, Ed Begley, Mary Jane Croft, and Jane Morgan, and featured Gloria Holliday as Gloria and Joseph Kearns as old Doc Yak Yak.
And Jess Kirkpatrick, you know, as the little goat.
Yes, Norman McDonald directed, and the music was composed and conducted by Jack Meekin. Honest Harold, created by Harold Perry, was written by Gene Stone, Jack Robinson, and Dick Powell.
The Harold Perry Show on Tuned to Yesterday from January 10th, 1951 on CBS. You're listening to an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now Eve Arden stars as Our Miss Brooks from July 31st, 1955 on CBS.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Although it was a difficult decision to make, our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, finally made it. So, after 6 years of practically going steady with Philip Boynton, last week she finally gave the green light to other men.
Yes, last week I gave them the green light. And since then, they've acted as though my street is under repairs. However, I did meet a salesman named Freddie Stewart. And when a girl has spent 6 years being taken to a hot dog stand for dinner, a movie, and then a soda fountain afterward, anything would seem like a change. So Wednesday night I went out with Freddie, and the evening seemed most enjoyable. The hot dogs were delicious, the movie great, and the double malteds were out of this world. But of far greater interest than my latest acquaintance was my landlady's new heartthrob. For the past 2 weeks, Mrs. Davis had been trying to conceal her little romance, and I had been trying to conceal my curiosity. By breakfast time Thursday, I could no longer bear the suspense. But before I could ask her about it, Mrs. Davis posed a question of her own.
I suppose you've been wondering where I've been spending my evenings in the last few weeks.
The question did cross my mind.
Well, dear, I've been going with the most wonderful man. Oh, Connie, he's so worldly, so suave, so debonair, so romantic.
Who is he, Mrs. Davis?
Henry, our butcher.
Our butcher?
Yes, that's the man who's been dating me. And I have further news for you. Now hold on to your seat, dear. I'm even thinking of marrying him.
Well, that's one way of being sure of the choice cuts. Mrs. Davis, you're not serious.
Oh, but I am, Connie. Henry Pringle seems just right for me in every way.
But this seems incredible. Who is he? What do you know about him? Where did you meet him?
I met him over the phone about 3 weeks ago.
You met him over the phone?
That's right. I was calling in my order to Schmidt's butcher shop, the way I generally do, and Henry answered it.
How did you finally meet him in person, though, Mrs. Davis?
Well, 4 days after that first call, Henry appeared at our house in the afternoon with a large box tied with a wide red ribbon.
He brought you some flowers.
No, dear. Our pot roast for that night.
Mrs. Davis, you know I want you to be happy more than anything else in the world, but you've gone with Henry such a short time. After all, what do you really know about him? What has he told you about himself?
Well, dear, he's a bachelor, been in town a month, and he's Mr. Schmidt's partner.
But do any of your friends know it? And why hasn't he ever come over to the house to meet me?
Well, I suggested it, dear, but Henry is very bashful. However, he was going to meet you up to the time I told him you taught English at Madison High. That's when he backed out.
I won't hold that against him. That's when most men back out.
Anyway, dear, you'll meet him tonight. I invited him to dinner, and I told him I'd give him his answer then.
Mrs. Davis, not so soon. Oh, that must be Walter to drive me to school. Be out in a minute, Walter. Look, Mrs. Davis, I have to leave now, but please think this over for at least another week. Wait until you know a little more about Henry.
Miss Brooks, you haven't said a word since you got in the car. It isn't my driving that's bothering you, is it?
No, Walter. I'm worried about something else today.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about that, Miss Brooks. What can you expect when last night was the first date you had with him?
What? Walter, how did you know I had a date last night?
Well, Harriet and I saw you in the balcony of the Bijou. We were sitting toward the rear, and you were forward.
No more than I am with Mr. Boynton. What do you mean we were sitting toward the front? Well, I'm not thinking about myself, Walter. This concerns someone else.
Well, you're certainly not worried about Mrs. Davis's romance, are you?
And you know about that, too. How did you find out about that?
I was also up in the balcony with Harriet the night before.
You went to the same movie with Harriet two nights in a row?
Yeah, and tonight I'm going back alone and see the picture.
But the other night you saw Mrs. Davis up there with someone.
Boy, was she with someone, Miss Brooks. Ooh, la la.
Walter, I can't say I care for that ooh, and even less for those la la's.
Oh, I didn't mean any disrespect, Miss Brooks. But Mrs. Davis and this old fella certainly did seem to be enjoying each other's company. Yeah, honestly, Harriet and I thought we'd pop the way they were popping popcorn into each other's mouth.
Well, that's exactly what's worrying me. She's thinking seriously of popping popcorn into her friend's mouth for the rest of her life.
Well, you mean marrying the guy? But that's wonderful, Miss Brooks.
Wonderful?
Certainly. What could be more romantic than two lonely old people in the autumn of their lives who find the warm glow of companionship and thus walk hand in hand into the setting sun together?
Followed by two men from a collection agency and the sheriff. Walter, Mrs. Davis has known this man for a little over 2 weeks. What does she really know about him? About his background, his finances?
But Mrs. Davis is a mature woman, Miss Brooks. Surely she ought to know what she's doing.
Not in this case. But since we're practically on the school grounds, Walter, we'd better drop the subject for the time being.
Yo, sure. Oh, say, isn't that Harriet and old Marblehead? Mr. Conklin, out in front of the school now, Miss Brooks?
Why, so it is. I wonder what our principal's doing outside school.
Well, maybe he figures that gives him more room to pounce on us.
I hardly think so, but apparently there's something terribly wrong today.
Why, Miss Brooks?
He's smiling.
Yeah! I wonder who he expelled.
Well, it seems we're all arriving about the same time this morning. Good morning, Miss Brooks.
Good morning, sir. Morning, Harriet.
Good morning, Miss Brooks.
And how are you this morning, Denton?
Oh, fine, sir. Simply fine. Never felt better in my life. Absolutely in the pink. All primed and raring to go. Never better, sir. Not in my entire life. No, siree.
I never will learn, will I?
Well, I better get rid of this car. Want to drive to the back lot with me, Harriet?
Oh, I'd like to, Walter, but you know how Daddy feels about the two of us going...
Go right ahead, my dear.
Now, really, Mr. Conklin, I must protest against the constant injustice of never permitting your daughter to accompany me on so simple a journey as to go to the... Did you say go right ahead?
Now take that souped-up flying saucer out of here before I change my mind.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hop in, Harriet.
Okay. Thanks, Daddy.
I don't know what it is, but that boy always leaves me boiling. I can't remember when I've been in such a good humor.
I can't either. But you certainly did seem in a fine humor this morning, sir.
And, well, I might be, too. We had some very good news at our house last night. It concerns my wife's sister, Mildred. You've heard me mention her. The single one who comes to our house and stays for months at a time.
You mean she's finally getting married?
No, that's just it. She's not.
But how is that good news, sir?
Well, we were suspicious of the fellow right from the beginning. From everything Mildred told us about him, he only seemed to be interested in her for her money.
He did?
So I began to do a little private investigating and found the fellow had once been a confidence man and had landed in jail twice. Mildred wouldn't believe me, but luckily, when I phoned him and confronted him with the evidence, he told me to stop worrying, that he'd found a new sucker anyway.
Mr. Conklin, hadn't you ever met this man before?
No, that was one of the things that first aroused my suspicions. He never would come over to the house to meet us.
I think I'm beginning to feel a little faint. How did you know where to call, then?
Well, that was easy. I knew his name and how Mildred had met him, so I simply called Schmidt's butcher shop where he works.
Mr. Conklin, will you excuse me for a few moments?
Why, what are you going to do, Miss Brooks?
First, I'm going to make a quick phone call, and then I'm going to become a vegetarian. Well, I'd heard of older people arriving at the age of indiscretion before. However, not only did my landlady arrive, but I think she intends to spend the rest of her life there. When I finally reached her on the phone just before noon, the results of our conversation practically floored me. She refused to believe a word of what Mr. Conklin had said about Henry. Naturally, I had to discuss my problem with someone, so over our lunch table in the cafeteria a little while later, Mr. Boynton was elected. His quick, incisive mind instantly grasped the problem, and his first crystal-clear statement went right to the heart of it.
Boy, I'd sure hate to be in Mrs. Davis's place.
Oh, you'd be much too tall for Henry anyway. Yes, it is quite a mess, isn't it? Particularly since Mrs. Davis is giving Henry her decision to marry him tonight.
Well, now, let me get this straight, Miss Brooks. You say you called Mrs. Davis and gave her the information Mr. Conklin gave you?
Yes, I told her Mr. Conklin said that Henry was a confidence man, had been in jail twice, and had told him he didn't care about Conklin's sister-in-law anymore because he'd found another sucker.
And exactly what was Mrs. Davis's reaction?
She asked me what else was new.
Well, it seems incredible. Was that all she said?
Well, not entirely.
Oh, I didn't think so.
She also said to be sure to pick up a can of vegetable soup on the way home this afternoon.
Miss Brooks, didn't you ask her why she wasn't concerned with what you told her?
Of course I did. And Mrs. Davis claimed that Mr. Conklin was spreading the story because he was angry that Henry hadn't married Mildred.
Oh, then she knew about the episode?
Yes, it seems that Henry had already covered himself on that score. He told her that she might hear some wild stories about him because he'd been seeing Mildred, and when he met Mrs. Davis, he gave her up.
Gosh, then what'll happen to Mrs. Davis? Will she learn the real truth in time?
Listen again tomorrow to another thrilling episode of Margaret Faces Life. But I'm really worried, Mr. Boynton. There must be some way to bring her to her senses.
I wish I could help. Sometimes when I'm faced with a vexing problem, I find a solution by observing how my frogs and rabbits react under similar circumstances.
It won't work here. Very few frogs and rabbits consider marrying confidence men.
That isn't quite what I had.
If there were only some way to convince her that people don't marry so hastily, at least until they've looked into the other person's background. If anyone else were doing the same thing, I know Mrs. Davis would condemn it.
Miss Brooks, wait. I think you've got something.
Well, after all these years, it's about time you did. Oh, you mean I've given you an idea.
I'll say you did. Now, tell me, how was your new date last night?
Next time I have a secret, I'll hire a skywriter. Oh, Freddie Stewart is a very nice chap, Mr. Boynton. Very nice.
Well, I'm glad you like him, Miss Brooks, because that's part of my idea.
What is your idea, Mr. Boynton?
That you contemplate marrying him.
What? 6 years I'm going with the same man, and when he finally does propose, it's that I marry somebody else.
No, you don't understand. I don't mean actually contemplate marrying him. I mean just give Mrs. Davis the impression you're going to marry him after only one date. Now, don't you get it, Miss Brooks?
Yes, but I'm not sure I want it.
Well, I feel certain it'll work. When Mrs. Davis thinks that someone she cares about is doing something hastily, she may reconsider her own position. Then you can suggest she test out Henry tonight.
Well, since we haven't any time to lose, at least it's worth a try.
Of course it is.
All right, then. Right after school, I'll dash down to the 5-and-10-cent store.
5-and-10-cent store? What for?
Well, if I'm thinking of getting married, the least thing I'm entitled to is an engagement ring. Entree.
No, it's me, Mrs. Davis.
I know. Come in, Mrs. Davis.
My, you're home early this afternoon, dear. But why are you packing?
I'm not really packing. I'm just throwing a few things into my valise. I'll be back in a few days.
But, Connie, why didn't you tell me you're taking a trip?
Well, this one came up so suddenly and seemed so insignificant, it was hardly worth mentioning.
Why not, Connie?
I'm getting married.
Well, Connie, even an insignificant trip like that is worth telling me about since you're going to get married. Connie, when did you decide to do that?
About an hour ago, during a lull in the conversation. We're getting married this evening.
Well, I think it's simply wonderful, dear.
Huh?
It's what we both dreamed about all these years, that someday Mr. Boynton would propose.
Oh, I'm not marrying Mr. Boynton. It's Freddie Stewart.
Freddie Stewart? Freddie Stewart asked you to marry him, and you accepted?
Certainly. I didn't have anything else planned for this weekend, did I?
He asked you an hour ago, and you're getting married tonight?
Yes, Freddie says he doesn't believe in long engagements.
But, Connie, marriage is the most important step of your life. You have a whole lifetime to live together. It takes months to get to know a man properly.
Oh, now, Mrs. Davis. Mm. I will admit, if you hadn't gotten the idea first, I might not have accepted so readily.
Well, Connie, maybe I was wrong. Maybe we're both being a little hasty. I'll tell you what, dear. If you tell Freddie you want a little time to reconsider, I'll put Henry to the acid test tonight.
The acid test? I didn't mean for you to disfigure him for life.
No, what I meant is this. Since you think he's chasing me because I own this house and have a little money, I'll prove to you, dear, that you're wrong.
How?
Well, we'll simply reverse positions. You'll be the owner of this house. And what's more, I'll pretend to be your servant. If Henry still wants to marry me, then that should convince us both of his integrity, shouldn't it? Well, Connie, what do you say?
What am I paying you good money for, Maggie? Get back into the kitchen and start dinner. Persuaded my landlady to cooperate with me, I felt certain I could prove that her boyfriend was a complete phony. Later that evening, Mrs. Davis entered the living room, dressed for her new role.
Well, Connie, how do I look?
Like the perfect maid, Mrs. Davis. All the way from your white lace cap to your dirty brown sneakers.
Only a lace cap, dear. It's a doily I used on the table at lunch.
And you did a swell job on that dress in such a hurry.
You like it? I just sewed a little lace on an old black dress I found in the attic. But I'm afraid I cut it a little short. My knees haven't felt this drafty since 1926.
Ah, this must be Henry now. You'd better go inside and give me a few minutes alone with him before you announce dinner.
All right. But you will be nice to him, Connie.
Mrs. Davis, we've been all through that. Now, go ahead.
Well, all right, Connie.
Oh, hello. You must be Henry Pringle.
Yes, my dear. Henry Pringle. And you must be Miss Brooks. Oh, I've heard so much about you. Believe me, my dear, there isn't a morning when my little sweetheart phones in a meat order that your name doesn't come up.
I know. I go well with calves' brains. Now, won't you come in, Mr. Pringle?
Just Henry.
Well, come in, just Henry. We'll walk right in.
Thank you.
Margaret's already told me a good deal about the two of you.
Oh, yes. We're about ready to enter the sacred state of matrimony. Where is my little girl, Miss Brooks? I've brought her a little something.
Oh, how nice. A box of candy. What are they? Caramels? Nougats? Or chocolate-covered creams?
They're meatballs.
How delicious. Chocolate-covered meatballs.
Everyone brings his fiancée candy, Miss Brooks. I've always felt it's more personal to bring one's lady love delicacies from one's own business.
Lucky you're not a bricklayer. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome you here, Henry. I feel as if I almost know you already.
And I feel the same way. Margaret's told me so much about you, how you taught school and everything.
She told you I taught school?
You're not the school teacher?
Oh, gracious, no. That's only for people who have to earn a living. Or is the word scratch for a living? Why, that Margaret certainly has a vivid imagination. Next, I suppose, she'll be telling you she owns this house.
She doesn't own this house?
Oh, now, really? Does a servant ever own her mistress's house?
She's your servant.
Henry, am I coming through clearly?
But She never told me anything about that.
Oh? Well, let's go into the living room and wait for her. Only please watch those scatter rugs.
I simply can't believe Margaret's your servant.
Oh, here's little Maggie now.
Dinner is served, Mum.
I warned you about those scatter rugs. Here, let me help you out.
No, I'll be all right.
Look what Henry brought you, Maggie. A box of meatballs.
Oh, Henry, you shouldn't have.
You can say that again.
Margaret, is all this true? Are you really Miss Brooks' servant?
Am I permitted to talk to my friend, Mum?
Permission granted. But keep it within 10 words, Maggie. We don't want dinner to get cold, do we?
Well, that's right, Henry, dear. Miss Brooks is my employer.
Well, then all about owning this house, your little nest egg, none of it's true?
Oh, the part about the nest egg is true.
Oh, it is?
Yes, indeed. Margaret found it in the tree and back 2 weeks ago. It ought to hatch any day now. Now, I know you both want to get started with your dinner as soon as possible, so go right ahead into the kitchen, Henry, and sit down.
Into the kitchen?
Yes, don't bump your head on the ironing board. That way, the sooner Maggie can serve me my dinner, the sooner you can get at the leftovers. Well, let's have no more talk now. Right, Maggie?
Mum's the word, Mum. Coming, Henry?
Just a moment, Margaret. I'm not very hungry. Frankly, I never expected all this.
Well, I'm sorry if I exaggerated a little, dear.
A little? This isn't your house? No nest egg? You're Miss Brooks' servant?
But it really doesn't make any difference, does it? As long as we have each other.
Yes, well, frankly,
It doesn't make any difference, does it, Henry? You said last night, regardless of what, love would find a way.
And right now, it's looking awfully hard.
Well, Margaret, to be perfectly honest, I...
Ay-yi-yi-yi-yi. I'll take it. Walter, what are you doing here? You're not due to pick me up for 12 hours yet.
Well, I was passing in my car, so I thought I'd drop off some books I borrowed from you.
Thanks, and bye.
Oh, hi, Mrs. Davis. What are you all dressed up for? Going to a masquerade?
No, Walter, I'm not going to a masquerade.
No masquerade?
No, but you're going to a funeral if you
Well,
don't...
gee, that's a clever costume. If I didn't know you owned this place, I'd swear you were the maid.
Walter, blow.
Have I overstayed my welcome already, Miss Brooks?
On this earth by about 16 years.
Gee, some people sure have their moods. Well, good night, everyone.
Now, Margaret, perhaps you'll tell me the reason for this little game you've been playing.
Well, I'm sorry, Henry, but I wanted to find out if you really love me. If you would love me if I had nothing in the world.
Oh, could you doubt it for a minute, Margaret, little girl? Could you, Margaret, child? Margaret, baby?
Once more, and she won't even be born yet.
I know it now. I was a fool, Henry. Can you forgive me? Please try to find it in your heart to forgive me for ever doubting you.
It'll be difficult.
But he'll make it.
Believe me, Henry, I've learned my lesson. Nothing more will ever come between us.
Except the doorbell. I'll get it.
Good evening, Miss Brooks. Am I on time?
Sir, what are you doing here this time of night? And with a valise?
Ah, Margaret, darling, I see I am in time.
Osgood, what are you doing here?
What am I doing here? And who has a better right to be here than your husband? Your very own husband.
My husband?
Certainly. Aren't you going to kiss me, Sugar Plum?
She doesn't, I am. It's certainly lucky you got here when you did, Osgood Davis.
Osgood Davis? Margaret, you mean you're really married to this guy?
Henry, of course I'm not. There's not a word of truth in it. This man is an imposter.
There, I won't argue, but he is your husband.
Henry, you don't believe this, do you?
I don't know what to believe anymore. But I'm certainly not taking any chances.
Attaboy.
Not after being mixed up like this 3 times before.
What? Then you're not a bachelor?
Margaret, girl,
I haven't been a bachelor since I ran away from junior high with my French teacher.
If he'd said English, I'd have screamed.
So if you'll excuse me, I'm getting out of here.
Oh, dear. This is terrible. It's terrible. Then Henry really is the sort of man you told me he was, Connie.
With a number of embellishments I had no idea of.
But Osgood, how did you happen to come over tonight?
Well, when Boynton told me this afternoon of the tragic mistake you were about to make, Margaret, I knew I had to do something to prevent it. Particularly when he said you wouldn't believe a word of what I'd told Miss Brooks.
But how did you think of this husband role, Mr. Conklin?
Oh, that was just a shot in the dark, Miss Brooks.
Well, luckily everything worked out all right. And I believe I have an idea how we can prevent this sort of thing from happening again.
How, dear?
From now on, I'll do the ordering by phone.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, transcribed, was produced and directed by Larry Burns. Written by Arthur Alsberg with the music of Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Conklin was played by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Bob Rockwell, Gloria McMillan, and Will Wright. Be sure to be with us next week for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Our Miss Brooks on Tuned to Yesterday, a July 31st, 1955 broadcast from CBS, the final season for that show on the air. And that wraps up this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for tuning in.